On a rare solo episode, we're going to be breaking down all of the follow-along news and information in the wake of the Ipe Mizuhara betting scandal. Spoiler alert, it gets a lot weirder. Plus, a little amuse-bouche for college football. This is Robin Pod. Welcome inside. We're back. Right before we leave, we did a story on Ipe Mizuhara and Shohei Ohtani and all of the nonsense in terms of how that was brought into the public consciousness, how it was covered, what the party line was in terms of MLB's perspective, from investigators' perspective. We broke it down into 10 or so points that really didn't make sense. Many of the points in that document, in our opinion, have aged well. And they're still not answered. Now, this story that we did came out on April 5th, early April, I want to say. And a lot has happened since then. And we wanted to recap what those things are, how they intersect with the questions that we asked back in that piece. It really just raises more questions. And also summarize sort of what this means for the state of baseball, what this means for the state of the investigation. Because even though Ipe has pled guilty, this is not over. Our first piece was titled The Ballad of Victim A. Victim A is what Shohei Ohtani was referred to in the affidavit. The affidavit, now a historic document, at the time of that initial piece, it was hot off the press, and it detailed what Ipe was accused of. It detailed Ohtani's version of the story. It detailed Ohtani's agents and accountants and financial managers, et cetera, et cetera, their perceptions of the story. We have a new piece out on Robin. It's called The Encore of Victim A. And it's the encore because it chronicles several since-revealed chapters in the story. And they're wacky. We've got reality TV. We've got dentistry. But more importantly, we've got money laundering at casinos. We've got calculating Ipe's gambling losses. We've got other betting convictions. We've got other players involved. And most of these items are going to illuminate, in our opinion, the somewhat pervasive nature of betting around baseball and around Ohtani. It's as if, you know, Ipe being accused of placing 25 bets a day, every day, for more than 2 years, totaling $300,000 every day for 2 years, didn't paint a pervasive enough picture. But of course, none of this was ever about painting a pervasive picture. It was about painting the opposite picture. It was about painting a picture so unpervasive that Ohtani was in the dark about Ipe's activities the entire time, yet everyone knew Ipe was, quote, doing some shady stuff. It was so unpervasive that Ohtani spoke English, actually, with a lot of other people, conversationally. He just didn't speak the kind of English where you can hear about any of the bad stuff going on around you. And what you come to realize when you look at all of this in sum, as we started to do in the first piece, and as hopefully we're able to continue in this new piece, again, robinsports.com, you can only paint so many forced pictures before the pressure of your grip just snaps the paintbrush in half. Let's go to the Paramount Doctrine from early April. It is still the Paramount Doctrine in early June. Ohtani is the victim. Victim is Martin Estrada, the prosecutor. It is his favorite word. This was reinforced earlier this month during a press conference that amounted to what I would call a choreographed diversion, a sort of reverse compliment sandwich that showed MLB is more than willing to be tough on crime just as soon as they find some guilty players to punish who aren't in the sport's most elite echelon. To be clear, Ipe is clearly guilty, both of crimes and of really bad judgment. He deserves to be punished. I do not assume anything beyond that, including not assuming that Ohtani is some sort of evil criminal. But what motivated the writing of this piece in the first place, what bothers me personally, at least, about the proceedings, is that the handlers of this whole situation, the handlers are Major League Baseball, Ken Rosenthal, Jeff Passan, Nez Bolello, Shohei Ohtani's agent, his accountants and financial advisors, who I guess are card-carrying members of the Association of Deaf and Blind CPAs, Martin Estrada, the prosecutorial team, everyone involved, right, in rushing this down the conveyor belt to swift justice. When those people all refuse to let an exploration of the facts get in the way of a good conclusion, that was bothersome. When the facts presented made no sense and no one really bothered to ask why, or at least come up with a better cover story, that was bothersome. The more that people who are not themselves a victim go out of their way to tell you that somebody else is a victim, the more you should ask why. Let's open on Tyler Glass now. We mentioned we'd have an amuse-bouche for college football. We will. This is really the amuse-bouche of this story. The day after our story came out, by coincidence, Ohtani's teammate, Tyler Glass now, star pitcher, Los Angeles Dodgers, if you know, you know, he commented on the situation publicly, as if we needed more evidence of a contorted fact pattern. Glasnow, in this interview, in the same breath, exonerated Ohtani. Everyone knew right away that clearly he had nothing to do with it, end quote. And then also noted, same sentence, that the nature of IPE's general activities were broadly acknowledged by everyone, including people that had only known Ohtani and IPE for like a week or two, because this was still back in spring training. He just joined the Dodgers over the offseason. Specifically of Ipe's shady activities, Glasnow says, "We all knew early on Ipe was doing some shady stuff," end quote. Glasnow's comments weaken the message of Ohtani's innocence, and they weaken the message of those handlers. He was deliciously not on message, and Glasnow's comments, I think, remind us of the frankness of professional athletes compared to those in, say, PR. If we take Glasnow at his word, we are to believe that they all, quote unquote, knew Ipe was shady. Except for Ohtani, Ipe's best friend, the person who he was closest in the world to, he didn't. He didn't know anything about any shadiness, but everybody else knew that generally Ipe was shady, even though we'd only known him for a few days. It's the story's original sin. Glasnow's comments are not the most noteworthy or important development in any of this, by far, but they're a great table setter because it's just a little dollop of whipped cream that highlights the illogic that forms this entire scandal's original sin. Everybody knew something was wrong, but Ohtani knew nothing. Okay. There's a man named David Fletcher. Fletcher was in initial ESPN reports regarding this story before the affidavit came out. If, for those who don't remember, Fletcher was initially credited with introducing Ipe to Matthew Boyer. Matthew Boyer was Ipe's illegal bookmaker. Fletcher was initially credited with introducing them at a poker game at the team hotel several years ago. Fletcher brought Ipe. Fletcher knew Ipe because Fletcher was very good friends with, in his own words, Ohtani. Fletcher later clarified, it wasn't me. It was a friend of mine who gained Ipe admittance to this now notorious poker game, and that the friend introduced Ipe and Boyer. Fletcher also told ESPN that he never bet with Boyer. Well, this final statement apparently is not true. In May, unnamed sources, my favorite type of sources, told ESPN that Fletcher had actually bet with Boyer. Those same sources also identified Fletcher's friend from the minor leagues, Colby Schultz, as being a Boyer customer. Schultz, by the way, was incorrectly identified as actually working for Boyer. That is not true. Schultz was just another pro player who was a Boyer customer. 3 days later, Major League Baseball told ESPN that it was launching an investigation into Fletcher. But it was going to have a hard time finding evidence unless the government, who was already in the middle of an investigation of a huge illegal gambling enterprise that honestly goes far beyond Boyer, unless the government decided to cooperate with Major League Baseball. Well, the government certainly had no problem cooperating with Major League Baseball on the messaging surrounding Ohtani, nor with gassing up the Swift go-kart upon which Ipe rode into prosecutorial oblivion. And his life is over. Make absolutely no mistake about that. Ipe Mizuhara is going to be erased from existence. If Ipe doesn't tell Ohtani that something is going on, the story goes, then Ohtani has no idea that it's happening because of the language barrier. The whole story is saving grace, the barrier between Japanese and English. This image begins to blur when you realize that human beings have many ways of communication, verbal and nonverbal, especially when those human beings are good friends, such as Fletcher, as he self-described, was with Ohtani, such as Ipe, described as Ohtani's best friend, was with Ohtani. And Fletcher and Ipe were both doing the same thing. They were both betting with the same bookie. But Fletcher didn't bet on baseball. So, did Ipe, the criminal mastermind behind ordering memorabilia he was planning on fraudulently autographing to his team's own clubhouse under a pseudonym? Did Ipe, the man who thought that betting with an underground bookie was legal in California because one time he bet elsewhere using DraftKings? Did this criminal mastermind also manage to silo Shohei Ohtani from his other very good friend, David Fletcher? What about the crimes that people didn't do? It seems like as soon as new information about this story or its related accusations comes out, Ipe defrauded Ohtani, Fletcher bet illegally, Schultz bet on baseball, Tucapito Marcano, a name we'll get to in a minute, he bet on baseball. It's instantly overshadowed and recharacterized by the fact that whatever the infraction was, at least it wasn't the next worse infraction. When the full Ipe accusations came to light, they were instantly reframed by the qualifiers that Ohtani never bet, he never knew about any betting, and that Ipe never bet on baseball. The final assertion is especially dubious for all the reasons that we asserted in the previous piece. The final assertion came in spite of the fact that it would take a very long time to review 19,000 bets that Ipe allegedly made. And the veracity of the record keeping involved is also questionable at best, considering the records came from a low-level runner at an illegal bookmaker, not exactly proficient in Quicken, who flipped. When ESPN first reported that Fletcher bet with Boyer, of course it was clarified in the same sentence that Fletcher didn't bet on baseball. When Schultz was accused of betting on baseball, all his attorneys were left to do was demand a correction from ESPN, saying ESPN wasn't trying to imply Schultz bet using inside information, which now we're at a point where people want elements of reporting corrected to confirm that a story did not say something. If a story didn't say something, it didn't say something. Well, we want a correction that you didn't imply. That's not how it works. These reactions from the defendants are tantamount to your spouse anticipating that you're going to criticize them for something, proactively yelling at you that they're innocent of something else. They are your boss when you hit those quarterly KPIs, moving the goalposts when your next review comes around. One does not determine the culpability of a man accused of robbing a convenience store
by seizing on to the fact that he didn't also assault the cashier. These types of reactions are occurring for one reason. MLB's chief concern is making sure that when indiscretions do occur, the damage to the public perception of MLB's on-field product is mitigated or erased entirely. Belief in the integrity of the on-field product is equivalent to people believing that what they see on the field is legitimate. And if they don't believe what they see on the field is legitimate, then fewer people will watch. And if fewer people watch, MLB makes less money, and then it all unravels. When companies don't make as much money as they want to, people get fired. And so everyone around MLB, the players, their attorneys, those investigating and prosecuting the case, they all know this. And at a general level, not like a JFK conspiracy level, but at a general level, this is why the framing of the issue, from assertions of victimhood over and over again to no bets on baseball, no bets on baseball, to the paramount importance of the integrity of the game, that's why all this framing is so tightly aligned. Now that we got the framing out of the way, let's get to the softest bombshell that isn't a bombshell, but sort of is because everybody just sort of decided to collectively ignore it. I wasn't really even aware of this at the time I was reading the affidavit and writing the first piece. Probably should have been something that myself and many other people devoted a lot more time to actually vetting. He knows conversational English. The premise of Ohtani never betting, never knowing about his friends betting, never knowing about fraud, etc., etc., rests on the idea that Ipe single-handedly orchestrated a scheme to perform all the illicit activity himself, hide all the activity from everyone, and isolate baseball's best player from those around him, including his agent and his financial advisors. This premise, in turn, rests on the premise that Ipe was only able to do this because Ohtani only spoke Japanese, and Ipe was the only interpreter he ever used. And therefore, Ipe was the perfect gatekeeper. He was the funnel in, he was the funnel out. But it's apparently widely known that Ohtani speaks conversational English. Dodgers reporter Kirsten Watson, in a video that is conveniently balls-ass crazy enough because it's from Japanese media, so there's like, I don't know, Pikachus and little like slot machine-themed music playing the whole time. Anyone would think it was spam in America. It's unfortunately not a video with an English language media outlet. She plainly tells an interviewer from Japanese media who's coming over and saying, hey, let's talk to the Dodgers about Japan's biggest star. What's it like talking to Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto? Kirsten Watson tells this interviewer very clearly. She communicates regularly with Ohtani in English. They have conversations. They're probably not probing, you know, the poetry of Yeats. They're probably not reading a physics textbook, but they're talking. They know how to talk to one another. Fletcher himself, in remarks made before the affidavit came out that were completely overlooked, he tells ESPN, Fletcher does, we're good friends. We would talk all the time on the bus and at the hotel. We would talk on the bus and at the hotel. ESPN itself, shortly after the affidavit did come out, even highlighted one of the many recorded instances of Ohtani speaking in English and responding in English, showing off some new kicks. This was all known well before the accusations in the affidavit came out, and yet the collective consciousness just sort of forgot about it. The affidavit notes that Ohtani doesn't speak English fluently and speaks only limited English at present. I love a good negative definition. Does he speak English? He doesn't speak it fluently. Well, does he speak English? He only speaks limited English at present. Okay. It also notes that he didn't speak any English at the perfect time. the time when this allegedly all began. The book of Genesis of the Ohtani Ipe scandal, all the way back March of 2018, when his bank account was first set up by Ipe. The time during which, presumably, either by Ipe's insane long game cunning, or maybe Ohtani's actual insistence, Ohtani was made the sole signer on his own account. This is a critical detail, and we will revisit it. So again, this story has something for everyone. Does not speak fluently mean he couldn't understand others around him if they were speaking English about, say, betting? Well, if you want it to mean that, sure. Does it mean Ohtani was solely reliant on Ipe to communicate, and therefore Ohtani never spoke alone with his agent, financial managers, and accountants, even though all of those people multiple times wanted to know what was going on with this account, wondered why they didn't have access to it, especially considering it was his, you know, salaried account, the one where the tens of millions of dollars go? Maybe. The fact that he knew conversational English is particularly damning to one part of the affidavit, the fateful team meeting in Korea when Mizuhara addressed the whole team in English, with Ohtani standing, I don't know, 10 feet away, somewhere in the room. Ohtani was right there. Mizuhara addresses the whole team in English, and he confesses to an abridged, but later changed, version of the crime that he pled guilty to. Specifically, he said, "I have a terrible gambling addiction, and my good friend, Shohei, agreed to pay off some of my debts. I have brought shame upon, you know," something the Japanese would say. "I brought shame upon this house," or whatever. During this meeting, Ohtani was the perfect amount of in the dark, and they go into detail in the affidavit to build this portrayal, even though we don't really even need to include these details, just to establish this portrayal of, oh, it was all hazy for Shohei. Direct quote from the affidavit. This was back from April. "No one translated what was said at this meeting to Ohtani, and he did not understand most of what was said in English." Okay, so the conversational English guy couldn't follow most of what was going on. But Ohtani was able to understand there was an issue involving Ipe. Following the team meeting, Ohtani asked Ipe what the issue was, and Ipe told Ohtani they needed to speak privately. They then spoke at the team's hotel later that evening. During that conversation at the hotel, Ipe disclosed to Ohtani for the first time that Ipe had substantial debts from gambling and that he'd been paying his bookmaker with funds from Ohtani's account. We don't even need to include any of these details, unless they're only in there to establish plausible deniability. Plausible deniability is a great thing. Certain types of people really thrive on it. However, a lot of that deniability becomes implausible when you learn that doesn't speak full English actually means he converses in English often. How can someone know just enough English to talk to everyone, to carry on casual conversation, but just little enough English to not know if anything bad is going on around them? There's one side wrinkle to this story that involves the regulated gambling industry, and it draws a long line between casino money laundering to Matthew Boyer to MLB's investigations of illegal betting activity. There's a guy named Scott Sabella. If you've never heard of him, you've definitely heard of the casino of which he was president for 8 years, the MGM Grand. Sabella recently pled guilty to charges of failing to file suspicious activity reports during his tenure at the MGM Grand. What is a suspicious activity report? Well, federal law requires the casinos, and many other businesses, by the way, file a SAR for any suspicious transaction that could be relevant to the possible violation
of any law or regulation and involves at least $5,000. Translated, that means if you run a casino and somebody tries to buy things at that casino, like playing chips, with illegally obtained money, and you have any inkling that it could possibly be obtained illegally, like, I don't know, they're an illegal bookmaker, you have to file a suspicious activity report. Sabella didn't do this. Sabella had an illegal bookmaker who he was friends with, somebody from Southern California, in fact, but not Ipe's bookmaker, Matthew Boyer, a different bookie, a former professional baseball player named Wayne Nix. Sabella knew that Nix was an illegal bookie, and he knew that Nix was wagering with illegally gained proceeds. But he encouraged Nix to patronize the casino anyway, and he had Nix wire literally millions and millions of dollars to the casino, and he would then play with it. In early January, MGM Grand agreed to pay part of a $7.5 million settlement with the federal government to resolve the matter. But the matter didn't go away, because after Sabella left MGM, yet before he was charged with and pled guilty to the property's compliance failings, he took up residency as the president of another casino, Resorts World Las Vegas, which opened just up the road in 2019. So after the affidavit against Ipe came out, we've since learned, thanks to Tisha Thompson's dogged reporting at ESPN, that Ipe's bookie was doing the exact same thing at Resorts World under Sabella's time that Nix was doing at the MGM Grand. This is money laundering 101. You wire illicit proceeds from your illegal business directly to a casino. You withdraw the money in playing chips. You take the chips and you play casino games. And conveniently, at this part, you lose a decent amount of the chips. But that's the price of laundry. You cash out the remainder of your chips in cash, and then you walk out of a casino with physical cash earned more or less directly from your illegal sports betting operation. So the criminal activity followed Sabella to his next destination, and it was revealed just months after he pled guilty to, and probably felt as if he was putting behind him, the initial incidents at MGM Grand. Boyer also laundered his proceeds through Pechanga, which is a massive casino closer to his home in Southern California. Nothing to date has explicitly connected Boyer and Nix as business partners, but the Washington Post reported in March, again, overlooked detail as information was coming out of a fire hose at that time, that federal investigators found out about Boyer's operation through their pre-existing investigation into Sabella and Nix. The same prosecutors who took down Nix, Martin Estrada and Jeff Mitchell, are the ones who handled the Ipe case and who are presumably investigating Boyer, although Boyer has not yet been named in any criminal indictment. Nix and Boyer are both illegal bookmakers from the same area who both laundered their proceeds through the same casino executives' properties and whose illegal businesses both had deep connections at the employee and the customer level to professional baseball. Nix was a former pro baseball player himself. He employed several former pro baseball players, all minor leaguers. And at least one of his customers was a very well-known baseball player. You might remember him, Yasiel Puig, who bet 900 times with Nix altogether. But he never bet on baseball. It all begs the question, were Nix and Boyer's operations connected? And the reason to ask this question is to ask what MLB knew and when. If Nix and Boyer were connected, did MLB learn about any of Nix or Boyer's customers during their investigation of Yasiel Puig? Because you know that they did an internal investigation of Yasiel Puig. This would have been right around the time that Ipe started going hog wild with the wire transfers. Early 2002, middle, late 2002, early 2003. Did any of the other players' names come up that have since come out? Did they learn anything about Ipe back then? When a league or any major public or corporate body conducts internal investigations regarding detrimental conduct, they spread a very wide net to try to learn every possible detail that they can. which is why I'm inclined to actually believe MLB's public appeal for the government to share evidence with them for the Fletcher investigation. I believe that's genuine. What they don't try to do is reveal everything they learn. In fact, they don't reveal 99% of what they learn. Now, the Puig saga and subsequent investigation was described as a warning in the Los Angeles Times to current and professional athletes who find themselves in or around an illegal gambling scandal. A warning as in, we're looking under every rock. Entities such as MLB tried to learn everything they can to fulfill what we again reiterate are the two most important objectives they have. Managing and changing the public's perceptions of their product that may have been negatively influenced by any sort of detrimental conduct, and devising ways to put the fear of God into the possible population of future violators so that the same detrimental conduct does not occur in the future. This is not an indictment of MLB. It is instead intended to explore whether, if Nix actually is connected with Boyer, if MLB's actually been gathering information on this whole ecosystem for a while. And since league investigations usually drum up far more info than the league ever reveals, or any public or corporate body would ever reveal, then they could be onto a lot more than what is currently known. For example, Fletcher was an innocent bystander. Now he's under investigation because, quote unquote, anonymous sources have determined that he bet. That could be shaping all of this, if this is true, could be shaping how they've handled the entire Ohtani story from the beginning. And they have certainly handled it in a very unique, a very effective, and a very ruthless way. Can we take a brief pause to laugh at the IRS? So, Ipe got rung up not on illegal gambling charges. Usually if you're an individual, you aren't really charged with that. If you're a business, maybe, like a Wayne Nix, then you're charged with that. But if you're an individual, you're not usually federally rung up on he gambled illegally. They ring you up on something else. The federal government always has tools to get people doing things that they don't like. So Ipe got rung up on bank fraud and tax fraud. Bank fraud is the big charge. I believe 30 years maximum sentence and, you know, some big multi-million dollar fine. Tax fraud is the little charge, but that's the one that I want to focus on. The tax fraud charge alleges he didn't properly report over $4 million in income in 2023. The plea agreement, which came out a few weeks ago, which basically outlines everything that Ipe is going to sign on the dotted line to say, yes, I attest I did all this. That plea agreement says he didn't properly report over $4 million in income in 2023. The plea says the unreported income in question is from defrauding Ohtani's bank account, as if to imply that while Ipe was siphoning millions to illegal bookmakers to pay his gambling debts, he also sort of just separately siphoned $4 million directly to his own account. That math doesn't add up because they list all the wire transfers from Ipe to the illegal bookmakers, and the total amount of those wire transfers is damn near the full amount that Ohtani was defrauded. So one is left to assume that the $4 million in income that hit Ipe's account directly came from his illegal betting winnings. So was Ipe truly supposed to declare $4 million in illegal winnings on his taxes? Why, yes. As always, it's worth taking a moment to remind ourselves of one of the more absurdist enforcement tricks up the U.S. government's sleeve. According to the IRS, if you've obtained income through illicit means, then you or others are guilty of a crime, and the federal government will come after you. But if we can't get you that traditional way, we have another way. When you don't report illegally obtained income on your tax return, that's also a crime, and we'll come after you for that. In other words, you're not supposed to do the activity, but if you do, we'd better get a cut. In fact, the IRS reminded filers of this policy on their website earlier this year, before tax filing time. I love the IRS. I really do. Shout out The Pale King, David Foster Wallace, final book, never finished, but finished. Weird bad thing number 29. How is Ohtani not also guilty of tax fraud? We just chronicled that
One of the two charges that Ipe pled guilty to was tax fraud. His agreement says he knowingly lied when he told others in Ohtani's circle that Ohtani wanted his player salary bank account, the one that he set up in March 2018, the one that Ipe defrauded Ohtani via. The plea agreement says that Ipe lied when he told everyone that Ohtani wanted this account private. Let me say that again. Ipe signed a plea agreement in which he says he knowingly lied when he told others that Ohtani wanted his player salary bank account kept private from visibility. I don't think this is a lie. First of all, this is insane on its face because that's not how accountants or financial managers operate. There is severe negligence from those guys on all of this. But let's leave that aside. This raises two questions. If Ipe's conviction related to tax fraud is because he didn't accurately report his taxable income, how is Ohtani not guilty of the same crime? Remember, we are to believe that no one other than Ohtani, other than Ipe, who fraudulently accessed the account to drain it, had access to Ohtani's salaried account. The reasons we're to believe this are the financial managers in the affidavit all attested that they didn't have access to the account. Ohtani's listed in the affidavit as being the only signatory on the account, and therefore, aside from Ipe, was the only one with visibility. Ohtani clearly never looked at the account in question from 2021 onward, because if he had, he would have seen $500,000 wires fleeing out of it faster than schools fleeing the Pac-12. Or he would have seen, "We're sorry, your password no longer works." And at no point in any of the presented evidence has it been alleged that Ohtani did at one point sign over account access and then subsequently removed it again. In fact, if you believe Ipe, and some do, Ohtani wanted that account made private from day one. He earned $42 million in salary and bonuses over those 6 years in which he was the only signer on the account. $30 million of it came in 2023. So question one, how the hell did Ohtani report his taxable income if no one ever looked at the account? And if Ohtani didn't report his taxable income correctly, how did he not commit tax fraud? Having a really hard time here seeing how Ipe didn't just plead guilty to a crime of which the person he defrauded is also himself guilty. Second question. The totality of the evidence suggests that Ohtani genuinely did want to keep his own salaried account private. Yet, the factual basis established in Ipe's own plea agreement suggests that somehow this isn't true. This is what the plea agreement says. When Ohtani's sports agent and financial advisors asked defendant for access to Ohtani's account, and the one they're referring to here is the salaried account, Ipe falsely told them that Ohtani did not want them to access the account because the account was private. In truth and in fact, as Ipe then knew, Ipe did not want Ohtani's agent and financial advisors to review the account because he, Ipe, feared that they would notice that Ipe was stealing millions of dollars from Ohtani. The fact that Ipe didn't want his agents and financial advisors to know he was defrauding Ohtani's account has nothing to do with the veracity of the initial statement that Ohtani wanted his bank account kept private. These are not mutually exclusive things. Now, yes, the criminal complaint notes that Ohtani told investigators in April that in retrospect, he thought his accountants, advisors, etc., all had access to all of his accounts, including the salaried one, all these many years, and woe is me. This to me carries the same weight as, I know just enough conversational English to speak with Americans about the fun stuff, but I didn't understand a word of Ipe's confession at the all-staff team meeting where he spoke at great length about stealing from me. And I still didn't understand it, even when some of the dozens of people that were present tried to tell me about it afterward. The affidavit notes that Ohtani's account was in fact private from 2018 onward,
but it doesn't say that Ipe set up the account this way without Ohtani's knowledge or blessing. The 37-page document, which of course spares no opportunity to throw Ipe under the bus, and why wouldn't it, has a golden opportunity to allege that Ipe deceived Ohtani when setting up the bank account by not providing access to those whom Ohtani wished to have access. It has a golden opportunity to say this, and that Ohtani even asked Ipe to make sure his representatives were on the account, but bad Ipe didn't. But it doesn't say that. It just says, in or about 2018, Ipe accompanied Ohtani to a Bank A branch in Arizona to assist Ohtani in opening the account, and translated for him when setting up the account details. The rest of this thing is gratuitous as hell. You would think that if the fraud was actually committed then, if Ohtani didn't actually want the account made private, that they would say that. Even if the condition of Ohtani only access to the account was somehow Ipe's idea, it's highly unlikely that Ohtani didn't know that Ohtani was the only signatory. Are we truly to believe that Ipe sat with Ohtani in the lobby of some Phoenix, I don't know, Bank of America in 2018 and concocted the mother of all long games, saying to himself, you know, I think 3 or 4 years from now, I might want to defraud my best friend and my lifetime meal ticket. My best friend wants several of his accountants and financial advisors to be signers on this account that I'm setting up right now. I'm going to tell my best friend in Japanese, while sitting right in front of this English-speaking personal banking representative, I'm going to tell Ohtani, my friend, that they're all going to be made signers, no problem. But in truth, I'm just going to tell this English-speaking personal banking assistant that Ohtani himself wants to be the only signer. And that's actually how it's going to be, because that's going to help me somehow. And the accountants and financial advisors will never once demand in the coming years to know why my best friend gave them no visibility into the account in which he's going to make many millions of dollars. I'll make sure that they never once talk to him without me present. And my best friend will never once attempt to check the account that only he has access to and that I will eventually lock him out of. This will all work. And, you know, since I'm deceiving my best friend right now anyway, I could go ahead and secretly make myself a signer on his account too, since my best friend is very aloof and doesn't know that I'm already being fraudulent in front of him in the first place. Yeah, I could add myself as a signer. This will really help with all the frauding that I intend to do later on, 3 to 4 years from now. Ah, but I won't do this. This would be too simple. Instead, when I want to defraud him several years from now, I'll do it the really hard way and also commit massive amounts of bank fraud. I'll change his online credentials and then call the bank and impersonate him and try like 17 times before it works. And then eventually I'll break through and I'll authorize an insane number of wire transfers over and over again. That's what you have to believe happened for any of this to make sense. If you do not believe that this happened, then it is plausible for you to believe that Ipe was acting in something close to good faith when he set up the account as Ohtani being the only one to have access to it. Why would Ipe have begun deceiving Ohtani in March 2018 at the point of bank account creation when such actions would provide no benefit to Ipe until like 4 years later, when like the flip of a light switch, he decided to start betting $300,000 a day and needed a source to fund it? If defrauding Ohtani was Ipe's plan all along, Ipe would have made himself a signer on day one and wouldn't have started trying to pay off all his gambling debts through several other means, which late 21, early 2022 he did, before eventually setting on, well, I'll just wire some money from Shohei's account. It doesn't make sense. If Ipe was acting in good faith when he set up the account to have Ohtani only access, then Ohtani likely wanted his account set up that way, or at least knew it was being set up that way and didn't object. If he'd objected, it would have been in the affidavit. If he said, I want 21 people to be signers on it because they handle all the stuff for me, it would have been in the affidavit. If Ohtani didn't want it to be Ohtani-only access, he would have, at some point, cared. He would have inquired as to who could access it. He would have mandated that he met with his accountants, which he apparently never, ever did. Thus, what is Ipe attesting to that he lied about? The only way Ipe can appeal his plea is if he argues that he didn't plead guilty voluntarily, which is amazing, by the way. A quick note on dental work. This was just great. Almost as good as the IRS. One of the critical details of Ipe's original story to ESPN, which Ohtani's own publicists greenlit, we have to keep reminding people of that. One of the critical details of that story, which now, of course, no one remembers because it's been scrubbed from the collective consciousness, was that Ohtani agreed as a good friend to pay off said debts. Of course, when the news of these initial assertions leaked, which could have made Ohtani culpable, about 7,000 attorneys hit the record scratch button and changed the prevailing narrative to Ohtani knew nothing and he blessed no such payments. The plea agreement does note that Ohtani agreed to fund other purchases that Ipe couldn't afford, other forthcoming debts, like massive amounts of dental work. From the plea, Ohtani agreed to pay for Ipe's dental work and authorized a check to the defendant for $60,000 drawn on a different account from the one that Ipe defrauded. However, without permission or authorization, Ipe provided the dentist with Ohtani's debit card number for the account that he did defraud and charged $60,000 to that account that he defrauded. After Ipe paid the dentist with Ohtani's defrauded account and the debit card connected to that, Ipe then took that original check for $60,000 that Ohtani wrote out to him and he just pocketed it, put it in his personal checking account. So setting aside the obvious jokes about Ipe needing the expensive dental work because like his face was taking turns being used as a punching bag by Boyer's goons and like Rob Manfred's goons, why are we talking about this? Like, why is the prosecuting team bringing this up? This was a key detail. This was mentioned in the press release. This was mentioned at the press conference. This is mentioned in the plea agreement. And it's all new. And it's completely unnecessary. And also, why would Ipe do this? If Ipe had already stolen $16 million from Ohtani through a foolproof method, why would he go to all the trouble of asking Ohtani for a check? Why wouldn't he just continue to use the foolproof method? It's worked for years. Also, why is Ipe asking Ohtani for a personal favor just so that he can steal another $60,000? Our dude was $24 million in debt with Boyer. What is $60,000 going to do? Does any of this really even matter in terms of establishing Ipe's character as devious and dishonest? I mean, that's the point of putting this in there. New kindling for the fire of how bad Ipe's character is. There's ample evidence for establishing that already, right? When you say someone stole $16 million to bet with and he spent $300,000 a day and he was $40 million in debt and he defrauded his friend of a lot of this money over the course of 2+ years, adding in that the victim was actually willing to pay his defrauder $60,000 for dental expenses and then the defrauder stole another $60,000, it's minutia. Yet the U.S. Attorney's Office couldn't resist highlighting it, right? It's tantamount to prosecutors, including in the affidavit, those text messages from Matt Boyer to Ipe that clearly say Ipe didn't steal money from Ohtani. I believe Boyer's words were, I know you didn't steal from him. And then the prosecutor's acting like as if those text messages supported their case. All this inclusion seems to illustrate, other than being very weird, is that Ohtani was actually willing to pay for some of Ipe's expenses. And that matters because that brings us back to the very, very, very initial germination of this story, which everyone has forgotten. Ipe's entire assertion that, oh God, I've racked up so much debt. I have so much shame. I have a terrible addiction. But my good friend Shohei, whose publicists have trotted me out here to say this to you, has agreed to pay off those debts for me. why are we echoing that? Why are we bringing that back if you're the prosecutorial team?
I don't get it.
June 4th was a very important day for the MLB PR engine, which, unlike Ohtani's publicists, actually knows what it's doing. It was on this day that Ipe formally pled guilty in court. He will be sentenced in October. He will likely serve jail time. In the interim, by the way, he's been fired from Uber Eats. Apparently, he's been working for Uber Eats for several years, between bouts of like traveling the world with Shohei Ohtani and working in baseball and betting 25 times a day. Sure. The media coverage around the court date, the plead guilty date, June 4th, was used by the prosecution and Major League Baseball as yet another opportunity to hit all of their desired integrity salvaging talking points. And it was choreographed like Swan Lake. Martin Estrada: Mr. Ohtani is an immigrant, came to this country, is not familiar with the ways of this country, and therefore was easy prey. For Major League Baseball: MLB considers Shohei Ohtani a victim, sorry, what the record was skipping there, a victim of fraud, and this matter has been closed. MLB.com wrote an article about the guilty plea, and they just rolled out the greatest hits from last April, when the affidavit came out. I want to emphasize this point, U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada said during an April news conference. Mr. Ohtani is considered a victim. Okay, thanks for refreshing that 3 months later. From Ohtani on the day of the plea. Back to his pretty good English levels again. This full admission of guilt has brought important closure to me and to my family. You might think, enough already, we've covered all this. Everyone has already taken victory laps. They took them the moment the affidavit was released, and again, the moment the news broke that he was going to plead guilty, which we knew about long before June 4th. Why are you telling me for a third time how much of a victim Ohtani is? Isn't it in everyone's interest to even like stop talking about this and for the story to go away? It isn't, actually, when you realize what the purpose of June 4th was. And that purpose was to facilitate the reverse compliment sandwich of PR. June 4th was also the day that MLB decided to hit Tucapita Marcano, a now former Pirates and Padres player, with a lifetime ban for betting on baseball. Even for betting on his own team. Terrible look. MLB also served shorter punishments to four existing minor league players. There was no time for people to marinate on the fact that, holy shit, baseball players are actually betting on their own teams, because you didn't even hear about what Marcano did past one sentence, because as soon as the story came out, the story was just how swift and decisive and devastating the punishment was. These punishments came by virtue of evidence that MLB's investigations department sourced themselves, not from existing criminal investigations. Conveniently, these players' betting activity was done in the legal market, not the world of Wayne Nix and Matthew Boyer, but like, you know, FanDuel, meaning that MLB's sports betting partners at least had some shot of identifying it and reporting the activity. And to those partners' credit, they did. Now, I'm sort of envisioning a scenario in which people are saying, ugh, Ipe pled guilty, but it's still not enough. The perception is bad. Hey, FanDuel, who do you got for us? Not anyone big, but do you got any lower-level guys? Something slightly sub-jante. Any names? Anybody? Oh, you found four minor leaguers. That's perfect. Serving these punishments in virtually the same breath and absolutely on the same day and at the same press conference as the Ipe final hammer coming down, it helped feed a whole bunch of fresh meat to the wolves of justice. MLB is tough on crime. Our game is not compromised. We root out the corruption. See? Look how tough we are. We've got guilty pleas and we've got lifetime bans. We're scrubbing it clean. But the Ipe Marcano 1-2 punch formed the two strong slices of bread in the sandwich. But between the two slices was the fact that there is likely an ongoing criminal investigation into the full extent of Boyer's operations, which hasn't even come to light.
and that definitely involved baseball. What's between the two slices is the fact that the David Fletcher investigation, you know, into him betting illegally, the guy who was Ohtani's teammate, the guy that was bringing people to poker games, but then not, maybe. The fact that that investigation is just beginning. What's between the two slices is that still so much of this makes no sense. And I would argue post-plea agreement makes even littler sense. What's between these two slices is the fact that we will likely never know anything even close to the full truth.